I'm Reginald Hardwick. From Illinois Soul, this is a special edition of Dialogue.
America's more like a quilt. Many patches, many pieces, many colors, many sizes, all woven and held together by a common thread.
But I am somebody.
Keep hope alive. Keep hope alive. Keep hope alive. On tomorrow night and beyond. Keep hope alive.
One of the country's most influential leaders, the Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson, has died. In a statement from his family posted on Instagram, they said he passed peacefully on the morning of February 17th, surrounded by his family. Jackson was 84 years old. He was a Baptist minister. His soaring oratory and charisma helped propel him to the national stage. Jackson fought for the rights of Black Americans for decades. He ran for president twice and inspired millions during a lifetime of achievement and controversy that bridged a divide between civil rights activism and electoral politics. We start with this remembrance by NPR's Cheryl Corley.
When Jesse Jackson held his weekly Saturday morning meetings at his Rainbow Push headquarters in Chicago, it often sounded like Sunday church with a mix of music and message. This was a celebration for Jackson's 75th birthday. He was at home in an auditorium where he had for years urged people to celebrate blackness, looking like an elder statesman, tall at 6'3", gray at the temples, and wearing a brown jacket. Jackson smiled as the choir sang, then walked to the microphone and led the audience in his trademark chant.
I am somebody. I am somebody.
Journalist Barbara Reynolds, the author of the Jackson biography, America's David, says Jackson had tremendous allure, swashbuckling good looks, and he knew how to turn a phrase. She says in the early days, thousands came to Operation Push to hear Jackson's rhyming atmosphere of hope.
It had a cadence that we were used to hearing from the Black church, but it was a cadence, you know, of now. Not what we're going to get when we die and all go to heaven, but we're going to get ours right now. And he was young.
A hip Chicago preacher who wore tennis shoes and leather jackets. Jackson was born Jesse Lewis Burns on October 8, 1941, in Greenville, South Carolina. His surname changed to Jackson after his single mother married and his stepfather adopted him. Later, as a college student at what's now North Carolina A&T, Jackson became a leader in the lunch counter sit-ins protesting the whites-only policies at restaurants. He'd go on to join Martin Luther King Jr.'s Southern Christian Leadership Conference, or SCLC. In 1968, he was among the group of aides who witnessed King's assassination in Memphis.
You couldn't tell it was a shot.
You didn't hear a shot?
No, until it hit his face. It sounded like a stick of dynamite or a large firecracker.
During the Jackson birthday celebration, his protege, Reverend Al Sharpton, recounted how King had appointed Jackson to head Operation Breadbasket in Chicago. It was the arm of the SCLC focused on improving the economic conditions of Black Americans. Sharpton says Jackson turned a regional organization into a national one.
He stayed here building an economic movement, boycotts, opening doors, and opening boardrooms and all, and then a political movement.
Jackson split with the SCLC after King's death. In 1971, he founded Operation Push, People United to Serve Humanity. Later, he merged Push with his National Rainbow Coalition. The late Frank Watkins, a longtime Jackson aide, said during an interview with NPR about the early days that the emphasis from the beginning was on pushing for a greater share of political and economic power for African Americans and the poor. There were boycotts of stores and corporations, along with efforts to expand franchise opportunities and other business avenues for African Americans.
I can't think of another private citizen who probably contributed more jobs and more economic opportunities than Reverend Jackson.
Voter registration drives were also on the Push agenda. In 1983, as Jackson launched a national voter registration drive, crowds chanting "Run, Jesse, run!" urged him to run for president. That November, he told supporters he would seek the Democratic nomination.
Our time has come, all the way from the State House to the courthouse to the White House. Our time has come.
During the campaign, there were some stumbles. Jackson drew criticism and apologized for making a disparaging remark about New York's Jewish community. He'd go on to place third in the Democratic primary, the strongest showing ever by an African-American candidate. He ran for president again in 1988, and he won more than 7 million votes and became the first African-American candidate to win major primaries. His convention speech electrified Democrats who waved red and white Jesse signs.
America will get better and better. Keep hope alive. Keep hope alive. Keep hope alive.
Jackson's campaign made sure that African-American issues were included in the Democrats' platform. He also negotiated changes in counting delegates in the nominating process that paved the way later for Barack Obama's presidential win. During his lifetime, Jackson crisscrossed the country and the globe, spotlighting a plethora of domestic and international problems. He spoke out against apartheid, called for a Palestinian state. He talked about issues that affected women, workers, students, and immigrants. He brought home hostages from Cuba, Syria, Kuwait, Iraq, and Yugoslavia. Chicago Sun-Times columnist Laura Washington says there was often lots of eye-rolling and ridicule, though, when it came to Jackson's globe-trotting ways.
He was aggressive and shameless about jumping in front of the microphone. And at the same time, we know in this modern age that you've got to market yourself. You've got to market your brand and have power. And he made sure he was always top of mind.
And in 2000, Jackson received the highest honor a civilian can receive, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. A year later, he was embroiled in controversy after it became known he had fathered a daughter out of wedlock. Later, another firestorm when Jackson made disparaging remarks about presidential candidate Barack Obama. But in November of 2008, Obama made history, and tears flowed down Jesse Jackson's face as he stood with hundreds of thousands in Chicago's Grant Park and watched the country's first Black president declare victory 20 years after the last Jackson campaign.
That was a big deal. It was the moment, but also it was the movement and the memories. And I wish that Dr. King or Meg Evers could have been there just for 30 seconds. To see the fruit of their labors, and I thought about them, and I just wept. It was tears of joy.
In 2023, he announced he was stepping down as president of the Rainbow Push Coalition, a decision marking the end of an era.
I am somebody.
Somebody.
I am somebody.
Somebody.
Cheryl Corley, NPR News, Chicago.
But I am somebody.
Somebody.
I may be on welfare.
As the nation mourns the passing of Reverend Jesse Jackson, his eldest daughter is talking about their final moments together and what he was like as a father. Esther Yunjin Kang has more.
Singer and political commentator Santita Jackson describes the family's last moments with her dad.
We were all together as a family. It was a blessing to be able to have cared for someone who gave everything to us.
She says as a father, Jackson was always there for his kids.
He never denied us his time. The real present in his life was his presence when it comes to his children and to his family. He gave us his all.
She also says she is grateful to the city of Chicago for loving her dad.
The late Reverend Jesse Jackson's words helped shape politics as a leader in the civil rights movement. Jackson joined WBEZ's former program, Reset, in February of 2020. He spoke with host Jen White about his many speeches, compiled in the book Keeping Hope Alive, Sermons and Speeches of Reverend Jesse L. Jackson. Here's an excerpt from their conversation.
Reverend Jackson, what was it like for you to go back and reconsider these speeches and sermons that have been delivered around the world?
Frankly, I didn't want to do it.
Why?
Because often my speeches or sermons are spontaneous out of situations written to be heard, not to be written.
I am
somebody.
I am
somebody.
I may be poor, but I am
somebody.
And so this 84 and 88 speeches, many people requested them. We put those two speeches in the book.
You were born in South Carolina. You eventually came to Chicago to study at the Chicago Theological Seminary. And that was an interesting diversion for you because you were thinking about going to law school.
It was a tension between law school and seminary. And Dr. Samuel DeWitt Proctor was my president. He convinced me to try seminary out. And I got to seminary and I found my voice. I was jailed in Greenville, South Carolina, with seven other classmates in 1960. And then I met Dr. King at that time, and I went to Selma in 65, and we worked together until he was killed in 1968.
Speaking of civil rights, when you look back at the speeches and the sermons in the book, they span a range of issues, spiritual and political, domestic, international, but much of what you were speaking about, Reverend Jackson, are issues that are still top of mind today. Poverty, debt, voting rights, war, issues central to the current presidential election.
Those are timeless subjects.
Dream of peace. Peace is rational and reasonable. America must never surrender to malnutrition. We can feed the hungry and clothe the naked. We must never surrender to illiteracy, invest in our children, never surrender and go forward. We must never surrender to inequality. Women cannot compromise ERA, a comparable word. Women are making 6 cents on the dollar to what a man makes. Women cannot buy meat cheaper. Women cannot buy bread cheaper. Women cannot buy milk cheaper. Women deserve to get paid for the work that you do.
Are you at all discouraged that these are issues we're still grappling with?
No, what sustains me during these difficult times is my faith, my belief. It's all but that light is coming, and it's not a train coming this way, it's sunshine, it's hope. And I look over my life in the last 60 years, I've seen so much progress, frankly. Sometimes cynics don't like to talk about progress. I went to jail with seven classmates trying to use a public library. It's beyond imagination now. Texas to Florida to Maryland, we couldn't use a single public toilet. We couldn't buy ice cream at Howard Johns. We couldn't rent a hotel room at Holiday Inn. We've come a long way. When I graduated from high school in Greenville, South Carolina, I couldn't apply to Clemson, University of Alabama, to play football. So I ended up going to University of Illinois to play football in the Big Ten. But when I see Clemson play Alabama in the big game, my heart rejoices because I know to them it's not about skin color, it's about uniform color, about direction, not about complexion. Learning, we've survived apart, learning to live together is our challenge today.
Civil rights activist, the Reverend Al Sharpton, said Jesse Jackson was not simply a civil rights leader, he was a movement unto himself. Jackson is expected to lie in state at the Rainbow Push Coalition headquarters in Chicago, and a memorial service will be held at a nearby church. A final celebration of life will follow at the coalition's headquarters. Next on Dialogue, we'll hear from the frontrunners for the Democratic U.S. Senate race in Illinois.
It matters who's in the seat to stand up to the chaos that we see coming out of Washington, D.C.
I'm running for the U.S. Senate to preserve, protect, and defend the American dream, which is under mortal assault from Donald J. Trump.
In the Senate, every day, I will concentrate on your affordability and the accountability.
Candidates Kelly, Krishnamurti, and Stratton speak at an NAACP forum in Champaign. You'll hear from the discussion that I moderated next on Dialogue.